Tonight we continue a series that we started a few Sunday nights ago concerning Job and his friends, and this was a request that was made to study this topic, particularly as it pertains to the false doctrine of Job's friends and how Job answers that error. In today's time we see a lot of or hear a lot of attention about the so-called prosperity gospel that is just a repackaging of this same idea that Job's friends were teaching, and that is that the wicked will prosper in this life, and the righteous will prosper in this life, and the wicked will be suffering in this life, particularly as it pertains to material blessings. And so they condemned Job. Job's friends came to comfort him, but then condemned him, saying, well, since you lost all your possessions, that means you are guilty of sin and you've done wickedly and you need to repent. And if you do, then God's going to restore all your wealth again. So that's the essence of what Job's friends were teaching. Last time, 2 weeks ago, when the last time we were studying this, we went through the chapters where Eliphaz was speaking, and so we were looking at chapters 4 and 5 there, and then we also looked a little bit at chapter 15 and then 22, some of the portions of that chapter to see the consistency of Eliphaz's doctrine along those lines. Of course, he condemned Job and did so very strenuously, and one of the things that we saw that as things progressed, he became stronger in his condemnation of Job to the point where he even started contradicting some of the good things that he had said about Job that he was a witness of, the reason he was his friend, after all. And then as it progressed, he ended up contradicting that and denying that and saying that Job had always been wicked. So it reached that level with Eliphaz. We looked at that last time, but we want to start tonight looking at how Job answered after Eliphaz first spoke, and actually reviewing a little bit of what Job was saying about himself in his innocency in this situation, and then that will give us the opportunity to start looking and doing an examination of Bildad, the second of Job's friends that speaks, and we'll look at him kind of in isolation like we did with Eliphaz, and then the other one is Zophar. That we need to look at. But let's start in chapter 3 of the book of Job. After Job had lost all of his, first all of his possessions in chapter 1 and his 10 children, he lost all of that. And all he had left was his wife and his health. And then after he overcame the temptation that Satan put upon him there to curse God, which is what Satan said Job would do if he took away those things, because he accused Job of only serving God for those material things that God had blessed him with. So if you take them away, Job's going to turn against you and curse you, is what Satan said by that accusation, and was thereby given permission to take away those things from Job. As God was the one that brought Job up to Satan and said, "Have you considered my servant Job?" There was none like him, as he was a perfect and upright man, one that feared God and eschewed evil. Well, after that, it said at the end of chapter 1, verse 22, that in all this Job sinned not nor charged God foolishly. So then Satan presents himself before God again in chapter 2, and then he makes another accusation, well, that Job will turn against God if he took away his health, if he touched his body. And God gave him permission to do that, but not to take his life. So the limitation was still there. Satan could only do what God permitted him to do. But he did touch his body in such a severe way. And we'll get to see more of that, Lord willing, tonight. It tells us in chapter 2 that he was covered in sore boils from his head from his foot, the sole of his foot unto his crown. In chapter 2 and verse 7, and then he took a potsherd to scrape himself and then sat down among the ashes in chapter 2, verse 8. Then his friends heard of it and came to comfort him. Well, in chapter 3, when his friends arrived, Job spoke after they sat silently for a week. And in verses 24 through 26 of Job 3, Job said, "For my sighing cometh before I eat, and my roarings are poured out like the waters. For the thing which I greatly feared is come upon me, and that which I was afraid of is come unto me. I was not in safety, neither had I rest, neither was I quiet, yet trouble came." So when Job was on the receiving end of all of those blessings from God that he had before this, was Job one that was not considering that he could lose all of those things? Was he one that did not consider that all that he had was a blessing from God and was using those things accordingly? Well, we can see there from what Job was saying that he considered all of that, and he feared that he could lose all that he had, and that trouble could come upon him. As we all know that affliction can come at any time, and so Job was not one that had changed, and Job understood that. Well, one minute he was prospering, but even though he was still serving God, that something could happen. And that things could change very quickly, and that his life could become one full of trouble. And that's what came. So in that, of course, he's professing his innocency. I didn't change what I was doing or the way I was living. I had these blessings, and now I have this trouble. So the response that we saw from Eliphaz initially was in disputing what Job was saying about his innocency. He first acknowledged, well, you did live righteously before, and he speaks of all the things that he personally had witnessed and knew about, but then he makes a sweeping accusation based solely on the fact that Job had lost all of his things. Well, you must have turned against God and rejected him. So after chapters 4 and 5, then Job answers Bildad. And he begins in chapter 7, verses 1 through 6, and talking about his physical misery. Let's go ahead and read that. Job 7, 1 through 6. He says, "Is there not an appointed time to man upon earth? Are not his days also like the days of a hireling? As a servant earnestly desireth the shadow, and as a hireling looketh for the reward of his work, so am I made to possess months of vanity, and wearisome nights are appointed to me. When I lie down, I say, when shall I arise? And the night is gone. And I am full of tossings to and fro unto the dawning of the day. My flesh is clothed with worms and clods of dust. My skin is broken and become loathsome. My days are swifter than a weaver's shuttle and are spent without hope." So that's Job describing his physical condition. It really doesn't give us a lot of details there in chapter 2, does it? It tells us that he was had those boils, those sores from head to toe, and that he sat down among the ashes, but he doesn't give any more detail past that. We really don't know what that produced or how Job felt. I mean, obviously it was miserable, but he doesn't tell us a lot of those details or any of those details really in chapter 2. But it's as we go through and hear Job describing what's going on with him that we see a lot more detail about his sufferings. For example, how long it lasted. I mean, what does he say there in this chapter there as how long this had been going on now? In verse 3, he says, "I am made to possess months of vanity." And he's been wasting away over this time. The sores, I mean, what happens to sores? Did he have medicines or antibiotics or those kinds of things for that? No. And then what happened to him as a result of that? He's got worms there crawling on him in chapter 7 and verse 5. Those breaks are there in the skin. And I mean, this is misery that he has, physical misery that's going on and on and on. And he's going to speak more about that not just this chapter, but as the book progresses. But in verses 13 through 15 here in chapter 7, he says, "When I say my bed shall comfort me, my couch shall ease my complaint." And we've all experienced this when we got some kind of physical ailment, and it would just be nice to go to sleep, because if you can go to sleep, then you don't really feel that anymore. So, and that's what Job's speaking about there. He was thinking, if I can just fall asleep, I won't feel as bad. But then what does he say about that when he would fall asleep? Well, he continues to describe that there in verse 14. He says, "Then thou scarest me with dreams and terrifiest me through vision, so that my soul chooseth strangling and death rather than my life." So when he would fall asleep, then he had all of these nightmares and terrors. So he really had no relief. I mean, Satan was after him when he was awake and when he was asleep. And so that he was miserable whatever he did. And of course, we see that he had a lot of trouble sleeping in those verses at the beginning of this chapter. Very difficult for him to fall asleep because of his physical misery. And then when he did, then he had all of those nightmares and terrors. So he was a very miserable man, and this was going on and on and on for days, weeks, months now. So that should maybe help us appreciate a bit more of what he was going through. Well, he's speaking this in answer after Bildad speaks. So does that bring them to their senses, to back to the purpose for which they came, to comfort this miserable man? Well, no, and that's when we have now Bildad chiming in. If I said Bildad before, it was Eliphaz that spoke first. His answer was to Eliphaz. Now Bildad begins to speak. And after hearing all of that, what Job was describing of his physical misery, do we have words of compassion that come forth from Bildad as he begins to speak in chapter 8? And the answer, of course, is no. Bildad speaks in chapters 8, 18, and 25. So three different chapters. We'll try to look at those. And we're going to see consistency in what he says in all those three. The last one in chapter 25, it's only six verses long, where he gives a very brief condemnation of what Job was saying. But in all of these times that he speaks, he starts off with condemning Job and his doctrine. So in verses 1 and 2 of chapter 8, it says, "Then answered Bildad the Shuhite and said, How long wilt thou speak these things, and how long shall the words of thy mouth be like a strong wind?" Well, Job has just professed his innocency and then spoken about all the misery that he's going through in spite of being innocent. So is there compassion that that comes out from Bildad? No. He says, how long are you going to speak these words like a strong wind? That's pretty close to the kind of thing that that people today will say mockingly of someone as they're speaking. It's when you hear somebody talk about somebody's just full of hot air, sort of like that. I mean, here you are, just a strong wind. Well, this wasn't just a wind. He was speaking about what was going on with him and what God was doing in all of this. So that was not just hot air coming out of Job. But Bildad condemns what Job was saying. It completely is against everything that they believe about God only giving good things and material prosperity to the righteous, but the evil things to the wicked in this life. So for Job to say he hadn't done anything wrong and all this misery that he was in was while he was innocent, he could not accept that. Bildad could not, nor did Eliphaz or Zophar. So then after saying that Job's speaking and doctrine was like a strong wind, then he teaches his version of the prosperity gospel there in verses 3 through 7. He says, "Doth God pervert judgment, or doth the Almighty pervert justice?" So what is he saying about what Job was saying, that he had suffered these things while innocent, that he was suffering for righteousness' sake? He says that's a perversion of justice for God to do something like that. So he's accusing Job, really, in a sense, of blasphemy against God and his work by saying such a thing. And he says in verse 4, "If thy children have sinned against him, and he have cast them away for their transgression, if thou wouldest seek unto God betimes and make thy supplication to the Almighty, if thou were pure and upright, surely now he would awake for thee and make the habitation of thy righteousness prosperous. Though thy beginning was small, yet thy latter end should greatly increase." Well, how comforting would those words be for a man who just lost all 10 of his children? So he condemns Job and his children and then says, now if you'll repent now and serve God, then he's going to make you prosperous again. So there's his doctrine, very, very plainly stated there. If he were pure and upright, then God would make make the habitation of his righteousness prosperous, and his latter end would greatly increase. And there's no question that he's talking about in the material sense there. So there's his doctrine that goes right along with what we saw from Eliphaz that he was also teaching. And down at the end of the chapter, the end of chapter 8 and verses 20 through 22, there's actually some of these words that we can see from what God says are true if applied in the right way, but that's not what Bildad is doing here. He's misapplying the things that he's going to say here in verses 20 through 22. Behold, God will not cast away a perfect man, neither will he help the evildoers, till he fill thy mouth with laughing and thy lips with rejoicing. They that hate thee shall be clothed with shame, and the dwelling place of the wicked shall come to naught. Well, there's a truth to that if we understand that in the ultimate sense of what's going to happen in the hereafter, in the judgment that God is going to bring upon all men. I mean, ultimately, in the hereafter, all will be judged, and the wicked are going to face that destruction and punishment by God. And God is not going to forsake the ones who serve him, and he's not going to cast away a complete man. Well, God testified that Job was that perfect man. And he hadn't cast him away, but that didn't mean that he wasn't going to suffer in this life. But we can see what the application is of Bildad to what he's saying there, based on and what we saw earlier in this chapter, and what we'll see the next time he speaks also, along with the rest of those other friends. He's applying that to what takes place in this life. So by his doctrine, for Job to suffer what he was physically and losing all of those things, that is tantamount to God casting away a perfect man if Job were perfect. And God said he was. So obviously what he's saying there is wrong, but he's applying that to this life. And when he's saying that God would not help the evildoers, I mean, he's talking about in this life that the wicked are not going to have any, they're not going to be blessed or prosper in this life. So he's got the wrong application to the principle that he's speaking there, and thereby condemns Job. Well, after that, in chapter 9, Job answers. He answers the condemnation, and he also teaches, and he's going to refute the false doctrine of Bildad in chapter 9. And then he's going to say more about his physical sufferings there in chapter 10. But we saw this before back in chapter 4:17 with Eliphaz, when Job had spoken about that he hadn't changed what he was doing, but now the trouble had come upon him. And so Eliphaz in chapter 4, verse 17, spoken about what Job was doing, and several times in chapter 4, rather. I have a wrong reference there with verse 17, or actually verse 17, when he said, "Shall mortal man be more just than God? Shall a man be more pure than his maker?" So what was he saying Job was doing? When Job says, "I'm innocent," then he says he's exalting himself above God to say he's innocent when these things are happening to him, which was false. Job acknowledges in chapter 9 and verse 3, he says, if he will contend with him, he cannot answer him one of a thousand, after saying, how shall a man be just or righteous with God? Did Job say that he could stand on an equal plane and answer God? No. In verse 14, he says it again, how much less shall I answer him and choose out my words to reason with him? And then verse 32, he says, for he is not a man as I am, that I should answer him, and we should come together in judgment. So Job was not condemning God for bringing those sufferings upon him. He wasn't doing that at all. He was acknowledging the fact that he was innocent, that Job was living righteously, that he was serving God and fearing the Lord, but the trouble came anyway. But Job wasn't condemning God for that. So that's an answer to the false accusation by Eliphaz, and it's repeated by these other ones, that Job is exalting himself and putting himself above God or condemning God by professing his innocency in all of this trouble that he was suffering. He acknowledges God's power there in chapter 9, verses 4 through 13, and humbled himself. And it's interesting to see in verses 20 and 21 here in chapter 9 what Job said. If I justify myself, mine own mouth shall condemn me. If I say I am perfect, it shall prove me perverse. Though I were perfect, yet would I not know my soul, I would despise my life. So Job was not going to call himself that. He's not going to say, I'm a complete man. He was not going to say those words about himself. But God did, as we saw right there in the first verse of the book. God said that Job was a perfect man and feared God and was upright and feared God and eschewed evil. So God could make that testimony about Job, but Job was not going to say that of himself. So he humbled himself. He acknowledged God. He was not condemning God. He was not exalting himself. He was speaking the truth. He was speaking the truth about his circumstances, that he had been obeying God, that he was not had not turned to iniquity, yet all of this trouble and affliction came upon him anyway. And so then he answers there in verse 22, and this is a direct refutation of the error that Job's friends were teaching, that the righteous don't suffer in this life, and that the wicked will suffer and not prosper in this life. That was the false doctrine of his friends. Look at what Job says in chapter 9 and verses 22 through 24. He says, this is one thing, therefore I said it, he destroyeth the perfect and the wicked. If the scourge slay suddenly, he will laugh at the trial of the innocent. The earth is given into the hand of the wicked. He covereth the faces of the judges thereof. If not, where and who is he? So Job says that, well, there are some things that can that happen bad to the wicked in this life, but there are also evil things that come upon the perfect. He said, I'm not going to call myself that. He says, I'm innocent. I'm not going to call myself perfect, but the perfect suffer. And he also says that the innocent have trials. And also that the earth is given to the hand of the wicked. So the wicked prosper in this life. So Job is directly contradicting his friend's doctrine. He says the righteous do suffer in this life, and the wicked do prosper in this life. Those things happen, which is very much against what his friends were saying. And of course, they could not abide hearing that, and they're going to continue to condemn him for his doctrine and continue to teach their error. In chapter 10, we see more of Job speaking about his physical misery. In chapter 10, verse 10, Job says, hast thou not poured me out as milk and curdled me like cheese? And to feel like that, to feel like you've been poured out like milk and curdled like cheese, that's a pretty vivid description of how miserable he was. In verse 15, he says, if I be wicked, woe unto me, and if I be righteous, yet will I not lift up my head. I am full of confusion, therefore see thou mine affliction. And that affliction, he said, was increasing. In verse 16, he says, for it increaseth. Thou huntest me as a fierce lion, and again thou showest thyself marvelous upon me. So here he's been miserable all of this time, and it's getting worse. Look at how Satan dealt with Job. He was given permission to do anything with his body but not take his life. And look at the manner in which he chose to go about that. So he immediately strikes him with those boils that puts him in pain and misery. But then he drags it out over time. And over that same time, he's turning up the heat bit by bit, making this get worse and worse and worse over time as this goes on for many months. And you can see how he is torturing, afflicting Job to try to turn him against God. But Job won't do it, but he's speaking the truth about his circumstances and also how he was feeling physically in his misery. While we're there, just let's see a few other verses where Job speaks about that, other than here just in chapter 10 and what we also saw earlier in chapter 7. Just to highlight a few other spots where he's talking about exactly what he was going through and how he felt physically. Turn to chapter 16 to see verse 8. It says, "And thou hast filled me with wrinkles, which is a witness against me, and my leanness rising up in me beareth witness to my face." So as this was progressing, what was happening over time? Well, he was physically wasting away. He was losing weight. Obviously, his skin had become wrinkled now. So Job was gradually, his body was wasting through all of this. And then chapter 17, verses 14 through 16, he said, "I have said to corruption, thou art my father; to the worm, thou art my mother and my sister. And where now is my hope? And as for my hope, who shall see it? They shall go down to the bars of the pit when our rest together is in the dust." So he's having more of these creatures. His only friends are these creatures that are crawling around on him now. So the corruption of his skin and the worms, those are his companions at the moment. And he's lost his hope that he's going to get better. I mean, as we've seen from the very beginning, I mean, Job has had no promise. Does Job know that God told Satan, "You can't take his life"? No, he doesn't know that. He's fully expecting death, and he's stated that he is wishing that would happen at this point. He has no hope of recovery. He's utterly miserable, physically speaking. In chapter 19, verse 20, he says, "My bone cleaveth to my skin and to my flesh, and I am escaped with the skin of my teeth." And then in chapter 29, verse 2, he says, "Oh, that I were as in months past, as in the days when God preserved me." Again, a reference to the length of time that this was going on. So he was a very miserable man physically in all of this. And then here are his friends, rather than comforting him, condemning him for speaking the truth about his situation, that he was in all that misery when he had not turned against God and had not sinned against the Lord. And then he blatantly, plainly says, these things can't happen to the righteous in this life, and even to the perfect. And the wicked do have prosperity in this life. And there's going to be condemnation of Job saying that. But what Job is saying, of course, is the truth. And that doctrine of his friends is false. Well, let's see the next time Bildad speaks in chapter 18. Again, he starts off with a condemnation of Job. In chapter 18, verses 1 through 4, it says, "Then answered Bildad the Shuhite and said, How long will it be ere you make an end of words? Mark, and afterward we will speak. Wherefore are we counted as beasts and reputed vile in your sight? He teareth himself in his anger. Shall the earth be forsaken for thee, and shall the rock be removed out of his place?" So here he's saying how, condemning Job again and accusing Job of exalting his importance, really saying that he is proud and that he's speaking falsely. And the fact that he's refuting their doctrine, now they're saying, "Well, so you're calling us as beasts and vile in your sight." Well, Job said that. And he does say that they were miserable comforters and physicians of no value, but he did not call them beasts and say that they were vile in his sight. So they're taking his words and running with it and accusing him, or putting words in his mouth, accusing him of saying things that he hadn't said against them. They don't like having their doctrine refuted, do they? Well, they're not different than most people, are they? When somebody disagrees and contradicts what a person says, how often does that person then get mad in return? So they're doing that, but they're wrong in it. They're wrong, and Bildad's wrong in what he's saying there against Job. We see more of his prosperity gospel in verses 5 through 21 here in chapter 18. He says, "Yea, the light of the wicked shall be put out, and the spark of his fire shall not shine. The light shall be dark in his tabernacle, and his candle shall be put out with him. The steps of his strength shall be straightened, and his own counsel shall cast him down. For he is cast into a net by his own feet, and he walketh upon a snare. The gent shall take him by the heel, and the robber shall prevail against him. Now what's happened to Job? These things. And the robbers came and took his thing. So in all of this, if you see the words, I mean, they're getting more specific in their choice of words about things that Job had exactly had happened to him. And they're saying, now here's what happens to the wicked. Oh, that happened to you, Job. So guess what? You're wicked. And so then he continues on in verse 10. The snare is laid for him in the ground and a trap for him in the way. Terror shall make him afraid on every side and shall drive him to his feet. His strength shall be hunger bitten and destruction shall be ready at his side. It shall devour the strength of his skin. Even the firstborn of death shall devour his strength. His confidence shall be rooted out of his tabernacle, and it shall bring him to the king of terrors. It shall dwell in his tabernacle because it is none of his. Brimstone shall be scattered upon his habitation. His roots shall be dried up beneath, and above shall his branch be cut off. His remembrance shall perish from the earth, and he shall have no name in the street. He shall be driven from light into darkness and chased out of the world. He shall neither have son nor nephew among his people, nor any remaining in his dwellings. I mean, what happened? So he's basically, you're going to die childless, Job, and your name will be forgotten. Well, that's not exactly how it happened, is it? And so he says in verse 20, they that come after him shall be astonished at his day, as they that went before were affrighted. Surely such are the dwellings of the wicked, and this is the place of him that knoweth not God. So there's their doctrine. These kinds of things that happened to Job can only happen to a wicked man, according to their beliefs. And so they're very specifically condemning Job now with those words. Well, Job refutes that also in the next chapter. We see that in verses 25 through 27 of chapter 19. Job answers and says, "For I know that my Redeemer liveth, and that he shall stand at the latter day upon the earth. And though after my skin worms destroy this body, yet in my flesh shall I see God, whom I shall see for myself, and mine eyes shall behold and not another, though my reins be consumed within me." So Job says, what's happening to me? There's going to be a resurrection. So even though he was without hope as far as his physical circumstances and for his life at this point, he firmly believed there was going to be a resurrection and that he would be raised at the end and that he would be rewarded by God eternally. And that was a direct refutation of their doctrine, to say, I'm not going to die and be forgotten and forsaken because I'm wicked. No, I'm in serving God, and I'm going to be, even though this is happening to my body, there's going to be a resurrection one day that I'll partake of. And they continue to condemn Job for this. And the last words that Bildad speaks in this book that are recorded there in chapter 25, then answered Bildad the Shuhite and said, "Dominion and fear are with him. He maketh peace in his high places. Is there any number of his armies? And upon whom doth not his light arise? How then can man be justified with God? Or how can he be clean that is born of a woman? Behold, even to the moon, and it shineth not. Yea, the stars are not pure in his sight. How much less man that is a worm, and the son of man, which is a worm." Of course, that's a condemnation of Job again and what he was saying. So Bildad was teaching that same error that Eliphaz did. We see what Job's faith was and the truth that he spoke about that. Lord willing, next time we want to have the opportunity to look at Zophar, and he's not going to be any different in all of that, but we want to see Zophar, and then we really want to look at what, not just how Job answered this, as we've gotten a portion of there. We want to summarize all that to see the error of his friends, the summary of how Job answered that, kind of look at that as one body, but also then the other scriptures where God teaches what he does about what happens to the righteous and the wicked in this life and beyond, so that we have a very good and firm understanding of those things, because these are still issues that are relevant today. I mean, we still see a lot of we get a lot of attention on that kind of thing, and people that, I mean, atheism is growing. I think it was Brother Jan was speaking to me recently about the numbers he saw about that, and and we see statistics how many people, even in our own nation right now, or maybe especially in our nation, that are turning away from belief in God at all. And a lot of what you'll hear people say is has to do with this subject. When there's evil in the world and they don't understand it, and so they do choose to condemn God and put him out of existence in their mind, because they, by their understanding, they don't think that this could happen if there's a good God. So, of course, they're wrong in that, but we need to understand these things so we have an answer to it, and so that we're right ourselves in the sight of God and are able to please him now, and so that we can be like Job and partake of that resurrection in the end. If you're here tonight and you're not yet a child of God, if you have not yet put on Christ in baptism, this is an opportunity for you to do that. As many as of you as have been baptized into Christ, to put on Christ, he says in Galatians 3:27. And we have to repent and be baptized into him for the remission of our sins, Acts 2:38. If you believe in Jesus Christ, the Son of God, and you're ready to come forward tonight and turn to him away from living for yourself and have that body of sin crucified with him, put to death there, and so you can be buried with him in baptism and raised out of that water to walk in newness of life as he teaches and commands us all to do. If you need to do that, please come forward now. If you are a Christian, if you need to return to the Lord, if you've gone astray, this is an opportunity for you also. Please come now, all that need to, as we stand together and sing.